from Relay FM. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode 70.
70.
Recorded May the 30th, 2023. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. And with me is our own personal director of strategy, Julia Alexander. Julia, hello.
Jason, how are you?
I'm doing good. You know, getting into a busy time with Apple stuff. Mm-hmm. How are you doing?
Good. I was just thinking, someone's got to bring back that. How the heck are you? Like, I miss that.
Sure. You know,
the little emphasis behind it.
I don't know if I've got the energy to be that guy though. I think I'm just never going to be quite that enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I think I've learned enough about myself to be like that.
I think you just mean you're not annoying enough. I can be annoying.
I mean,
enough.
It could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the enthusiasm. I just can't muster it myself. So big news. We're going to start the podcast with the biggest news of all. If people haven't seen it on social media, if people haven't seen it on Puck. If you, like me, have been thinking for the last 70 episodes, wow, Julia's great. And she's got great thoughts about the future of streaming media. Why hasn't some giant streaming company come and hire Julia to take her brain away and use it for their own purposes? And the answer is, it just wait 70 episodes and it will happen. So, Julia, you're going on the inside at a not yet disclosed place.
Yes.
But it means that you have to leave Puck and Parrot and, unfortunately, also Downstream.
Yes, it's So it's the start of it's the end of one era, beginning of a new one.
Yeah, I'm very happy for you. Very happy for you. I'm glad that the giants in the industry recognized how great your thoughts are about this stuff and want to actually listen to you. Which, you know, as somebody on the outside, I have lots of ideas and thoughts and opinions, right? But it's not like Apple comes to me and says, Jason, we want you to strategize with us. It's like, that's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. But with you, I always thought, like, this would be a good hire. So I'm very happy for you that you get to make this move and see what see how the sausage gets made too, right?
Yeah, I'm very excited. So without giving it away, it's a large streaming company. The role is really interesting. So it is the best way I can summarize this role. And I told this to Jason a couple of weeks ago because we were planning for a bunch of Downstream things, which we're going to get into in a second. But the role that I can best describe it as is almost like an internal think tank sitting across strategy, insights, data, editorial, really thinking about how we consume things, why we consume things, incentive structures that are put in place, the value we put on experience and the value we put on entertainment, and really using that to kind of help contribute really to very, very smart people who are already thinking about this in a much more granular way about where there's room for investment to set up long-term success and where there's probably room to pull back. So everything that we kind of talk about on Downstream, but just doing for one company internally, as opposed to for many people externally.
They get to monopolize your brain. And it's great. I'll give people a clue that's not a clue about where you're going, which is we've talked about what you're going to be working on extensively on this podcast. But the thing is, there's so many things we talked about in 70 episodes that only you and I will know the truth about what special aspect of this podcast it's going to be about. Well, so let me address, because I know there are a lot of people out there who are like, oh my God, oh no, oh no.
I know, that was so nice. Can I just say, that was the best part. So I tweeted about this, to Jason's point about social, a few days ago now,
a couple days ago.
Time's a flat circle. And so I tweet, yes, because it was right after the Puck article. And so I tweeted, and you know, a lot of very nice people. Twitter can be a lovely place when you're announcing a new job or leaving a job. And maybe the only time that's a good place. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people who very like sweetly were like, what happens to Downstream? Like, I think Jason and I, we can see numbers and we love having the audience that we have, but to have those moments on social, it warmed my heart. So, you know, I love this little community we've built.
Yeah. Very, very nice thoughts and people concerned. Very happy for you, but also concerned because they like the podcast, which is really nice. Cause when we started this, it was a little bit of a shot in the dark, and, that was, you know, more than 2 years ago. Anyway. Yeah. here is the plan. The plan, I thought this podcast exists because I wanted to do a podcast with you. So yeah. There was a real question of like, well, do I want to keep it going or not? And I think what I've come around to is I want to keep it going. And I've had some time. I've had some warning. Julia told me this a while ago. I have had some warning and I've been working behind the scenes because what I've decided is I want to find, if I'm going to do it, if we're going to keep doing the show, I want my co-host to be someone else who is very knowledgeable and experienced in the world of TV and streaming media. So I can once again sort of like have a conversation with somebody who thinks about this all the time and has worked in this business for a while and has like thoughts about how it all works. And so in other words, if it was just me by myself, this podcast should not continue. But if I can find somebody, everybody's different, everybody's gonna have a different take, if I can find somebody who's got a really good background in covering this stuff and it works, we will continue it. So that's my plan, is to keep it going and find a new permanent co-host. In the interim, we may have some special guests. This may not all happen, you know, right away. I've definitely talked to my old pal, Tim Goodman, who I used to do the TV Talk Machine podcast with, about maybe a guest spot. He doesn't want to come back and to the old TV podcast grind, and I don't blame him for that. I also talked to somebody I really respect, Joe Adalian, who writes for Vulture, from New York Magazine, TV Mojo, really smart. I'm going to have him on. I think he's going to be in our next episode in a couple of weeks. So we'll bring in some ringers and hopefully find a permanent ringer in the bunch. So stay tuned for that. But we should move on, because Julia, one more time, it's time for Sports Corner.
Sports Corner.
Woo! Time for Sports Corner. Love it. One last Sports Corner here, anyway, with us. And I just want to talk about the NBA negotiations, because they're still going on.
Oh, yeah.
I think like 2 weeks ago we said, you know, the problem is that Warner Brothers Discovery has the opportunity to match.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? And the answer is, well, you got to put it all down. So what's happening now, apparently, is they are, quote, putting the deal to paper. Basically, they got to, you know, you come up with a handshake agreement with the general principles, and then everybody's negotiators and lawyers and everything have to come down and they have to put it in specifics. And in this case, it really matters, because there's a right to match that Warner Brothers Discovery has. So they need to get it right. They will probably try to do some poison pill stuff, especially NBC with the B package, some things that they will think Warner Brothers Discovery is highly unlikely to matter. There was a really good puck piece about this. You wrote about it too. Dylan Byers wrote about it. Dylan Byers wrote about a thing about how everybody likes and wants Charles Barkley, which I think is fun. Warner Brothers Discovery also has the option to match Amazon, which has a handshake agreement for the C package, which is a streaming package, which they would give them something for Max. I saw a piece where David Zaslav was actually quoted today saying, I mean, we got stuff. Basically, he said, we added hockey, we added the summer of NASCAR, we just added college football, because they bought some rights from Fox for some windows for that. When you put that together with March Madness and the baseball playoffs and the U.S. soccer that we have, it is a very robust offering for consumers that they can watch on TNT in the U.S. all year round. And that is our job, to nourish an audience that loves sports on TNT. Which sounds to me like he's already setting the stage for why it won't be so bad if they lose the NBA. And your piece in Puck is, which is your last one, I believe, Zaz, take the L, right? Just take the L, and then take the money you would have spent or don't have to spend on the NBA and do something else with it. So I ask you, what's his move? Assuming that he's not going to looking at the deals, he should not match them. They are bad. It would be bad for him to match them. They are deals that maybe make sense for his competitors. They do not make sense for WBD and for TNT Sports. And so if he shifts gears and does what he said today, which is like, we got other stuff, and has this money that he's not spending, takes the L on the NBA, what happens next for WBD?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because there, to kind of reiterate the two most important points of what you just said, there is the Amazon like 1.8 bill that he and the team think they can legally match, right? That's what all the reports say, is that right. They're looking at the Amazon deal. Then there's the NBC Universal deal, which is like the reported $2.5 billion a year, which they theoretically could, but they have no interest in. Like, they were looking at paying $2.1 billion a year.
And somebody did the math. It's like they would lose an enormous, even if they could match, which would require them to get a broadcast partner and all these other things. Like, it would be financially disastrous to match the NBC offer.
And so I think when I look at what Zaslav has in front of him, there's a really fun mirror game you can play with the NBA. And it's this idea that it's a 10-year deal, right? At minimum. It's a 10-year deal. Disclosure note, I, at Parrot, worked with the NBA. I do not have any insights into ongoing negotiations, but we worked with them on some of their pre-round stuff. So what I look at the 10-year deal at minimum, I report's about 11 years, this idea that you're deciding or trying to figure out the value of having those rights based on where the audience will be in 10 or 11 years is the important thing, right? So you have companies like Disney, NBC Uni, Amazon, who are all saying these audiences will still be interested in the NBA. That seems pretty likely. And they will be on streaming. Also seems pretty likely. But the question that I then drill down to further is, okay, what is the size of those audiences, though? If you look at the NBA ratings, on average, they've declined in the regular season. The playoffs have seen an increase. So what you're really saying is that we're willing to pay, the true value of having the NBA comes down to like a month and a half worth of games, right? It's the playoff series. And we're willing to spend on the decreasing seasonal in order to have access to this kind of event style, which we've talked about in this podcast, event style championship. Which means it's perfectly in line with kind of media trends currently, which is that there is no longer a middle class within media. Right? Like it's disappeared. You are either implausibly big or targetably small. And so you see this, a great example with like newspapers and media publications. Like Puck is a targetably small niche publication as it currently stands that can be highly monetized because of the fact that it is a must have for a very significant group of readers. Compare that to The Guardian, The New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, which are on the path of kind of being implausibly big. But the ones in the middle, the Chicago Tribune, you look at local newspapers, like those have all but disappeared, although you can argue that local should come back because of the niche audience. If you take that to entertainment, we kind of saw this play out over the last decade. You had implausibly big film and implausibly big IP that we have not yet seen in this industry at the scale that we saw it, at the consistency of it. And then you had small. You had A24, right? You had like indie films and docs and these types of movies that have always been around but have really found their kind of core online audience. So if I'm Zaslav, the question in front of me is, if I'm going to spend $2.5 billion a year, right? Let's say he matches the NBC Uni. If I'm going to spend $2.5 billion a year for at least 10 years, I have to decide if I think I'm going to be implausibly big or if I can be targetably small, because I don't think I can exist in the middle anymore. I don't think that matters. Like that's going to be eroded. If, as he said today at an investor conference, if there's only four or five streaming services left on the major scale play, that's a lot of combinations happening. And you've got two, Apple and Amazon, who have unlimited cash. If they want to continue being in that game, they may leave it because they don't have to be in that game, but they may stay, especially as advertising comes into play. And then you've got Netflix, who seems pretty dominant, right? So then you've got two more services left and about five players competing for that spot. So if I'm Zaslav, the question then is, if I've got $2.5 billion a year, how do I maintain my place in sports while also finding a way to turn my company into one of these two companies that the path lies out for me? The issue he has, right, the warship that he is trying to turn around in like a small little creek, is that the vast majority of their revenue comes from cable. So he can't just cut it off, especially with $39 billion of debt, right? So it's double the market cap of the company currently. So you can't just say, we're not going to support TNT, we're not going to support the Discovery Channels, which means you need to have enough in-demand programming to then have the cable company say, we want to participate with you. So what looks likely for WBD is saying, well, we need just enough. This was a term I use in the column a lot. We need just enough on TNT on the sports side, especially across all four quarters, especially Q2, in which TNT has typically been a nice bolster for Disney and Fox. The other major players, NBC and CBS, are broadcast, and it's a whole different game. And then if you look at the Discovery networks, right? So that's original content. That's really coming from the for Discovery Plus Max side. So what your best bet is to say is, okay, we need some form of sports that are high enough in demand for the affiliates to continue paying us and to slowly wear out that cable, divesting of ones we don't need, investing far less in it, and creating some kind of deal that Disney did with Charter, where Max ends up in a wholesale agreement for a lot of these cable subscribers, right? Like, that seems like the best option. Then some form of So along those lines, you then look at, okay, well, what sports are in demand, growing, but currently undervalued? And then how do you reach them? So again, cable plays to the implausibly big, but it doesn't have to be, especially if you have a deal where Max then comes into a Charter. And so what you're really providing is that kind of access to Max to those customers. The ones I said were like tennis, rowing, sailing, cycling. These are high income, not highly leveraged sports that WBD can go after. These have little networks that they could potentially buy or divest of. There's global audiences for them. So as Max is thinking globally, all these other questions that come into play is you just need to have enough of certain high held interest in that you can then play out across cable with the affiliates, but also in ways that you can doubly monetize them digitally. So something like tennis and sailing and UFC, which the rights are up for as soon, if I remember correctly, and WBD is a reported interest buyer in this, ones where you can say we're going to charge like pay-per-view, or we're going to come in with a secondary tier or a third tier, and right, we're going to monetize a smaller base at a higher level. That's where WBD can potentially succeed, especially if its competitors, the Amazons, the Comcast, the Disneys, the Netflix, who are much, much better positioned financially, are then able to come in and say, we want to be implausibly big. And the last part I'll say about this, and then I'll end my rant for one of the last times on this podcast. The last part about this is that if you're not spending $2.5 billion a year and the sports you are going after, because they made the NASCAR deal, they made this licensing deal with Disney for some football championship, college football championship games.
You're right. I said Fox, but it's actually a sub-license from ESPN, right?
Yes. And so they want to go out and they want some form of premium sport. They want to be just enough to be part of bundles, and they want to be just enough to be included in these larger games while finding their other audience. That costs much less than $2.5 billion a year. And they can then use that, pay down the debt that they have, and importantly, sorry for the boring accounting talk, re-rate that debt. So you can actually bring your leverage down, and the debt that you're holding on to is actually insanely valuable, right? So that debt, because the debt payoff is so far down the road and it's already been bought, the interest has been bought at, there's no higher interest on it, that's actually a really decent place to be. So the company is now in a better financial position. Now, the hardest part for WBD has always been, Jason and I have talked about this at length, always been that they can't build. They've been very good at tearing down, very McKinsey about it, right? Like, they've torn it down, they've done layoffs, they've cut projects, they're very good at being like, and look, and that was what Zaslav always said, you know, we're down here. And that is, of course, tied to his pay. So there's an incentive for him to then say, well, we're going to focus on free cash flow. But if you find small premium sports that help you build up an audience, that help you, that helps build up your stature inside bundles, that helps you build up new relationships with the cable operators, you can actually start building towards a different a company. And to be clear, and this is the issue, this is the core issue of why I don't think this will happen. And I couldn't get into it in PUG because it would have been far too long. The reason why I don't think it will happen is because they're going from a company that did huge margins on cable, right? Huge profit margins on cable. And so their investors are saying, we want to be there. They're never going to be there again. They're never going to be back there. That's not to say streaming will never be back there. I think there are companies that will. WBD is unlikely to never get back there. And the way that they're going about it is not the right way to go about getting back to those high profit margins. But if you want to be a company that exists down the road, that belongs to bundles, that can potentially merge with another company, that still has a lot to go for and builds upon audiences of tomorrow, upon technologies of tomorrow, there are ways to do it without the NBA.
Yeah, you know, it's a very adult thing to say, it's like, Mom, but I want to buy the NBA. And you're like, no, pay down your debt instead. Pay off your credit cards. But there's some truth in that. And, you know, again, reading your column and then seeing what Zaz said today, like, I mean, he's making the point when he says, look, NHL, NASCAR, college football. Like, people are like, oh, without, what is TNT Sports without the NBA? And he's like, they got other things. They're playing, they're making other bets. They did the sub-license deal with Disney. That was smart. They've got the baseball deal. They've got the U.S. soccer deal. They've got NASCAR that they picked up. They've got NHL. Mm-hmm. Like, you can go shopping for a collection of things. And no, they're never going to be the biggest player in Spulu or whatever, right? Like, but they've got an over-the-top offering where you can buy, you know, you can add on to Bleacher Report, or it'll be on cable on TNT, and they can build and they can take some of that money, like you said, and invest it in some other smart places. And also then, yeah, don't spend the rest of that money. Maybe pay off more of your debt instead. Not as exciting, but still a strategy.
I think, they get compared a lot, and I get it, because this is worth who they want to be compared to like the Disneys and the Netflixes and the Amazons. And it's just an unrealistic bet that 10 years from now, they'll still be in those similar positions. But if they can carve out ownership of a market that then makes them a really agreeable merger partner while their debt is paid down, they carry good debt, now it becomes a pretty high bid for WBD, which is going to probably increase the value of what shareholders would get, right? At the end of the day, that's basically what you have to do. The thing I want to end on about with WBD, I'm going to quote my old boss, good friend of mine, Neelai Patel, who when he texted about where I was going and I told him, he just said in all caps, I knew it. But Neelai, the thing he says a lot is, companies die. Websites die. Like, this happens. And the idea that 10 years from now, if I'm Zaslav, and I don't even know if he maybe knows this, but if I'm him, am I betting that my company exists 10 years from now? And I think today I wouldn't. Do I think the assets will belong to another company of which I am a part of in some capacity? Yes. But do I think WBD is a standalone, implausibly large competitor?
No.
I don't think so. I think it just needs to be, again, the term I use a lot in the puck column is, it just needs to be enough, just enough that it finagles its way into being the intersection and the interlocking of a larger web. That means if it were to disappear, would be cataclysmic for the industry and leads to a very high purchase. Not that Rupert Murdoch was in the same position with Fox, but you know, he got $71 billion for an asset that probably wasn't worth $71 billion. A la that strategy, and I think that's, if I know that's part of my pathway, if I know that where I'm likely to go is already going to have the NBA rights potentially, why would I bid on them when I can actually just spend on other things and de-risk? Lower my leverage and reduce my debt, and then make myself far more appealing for an acquisition down the road.
It's time now for a final bunch of letters. I thought we would blow out some letters before you go.
I love letters. Let's get some letters.
Letters from listeners.
Letters from listeners.
Like you.
All my songs are the same.
Yeah. Sports Corner. Love letters.
I know.
This is from Brian, friend of the show. Brian, they write, the only discussion of Bridgerton season 3 that I'm seeing anywhere online is frustration and sometimes outright anger about how this first drop of 4 episodes ends with the final 4 episodes being released in a few weeks. Did Netflix misjudge one of its rare multi-drop seasons here and upset the Bridgerton audience, or is all press good press? That's Brian from the 617. What do you think?
No, this is what you do when you know you can command the audience and you end. This was just cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Remember when you would end a season and you'd wait 3-4 months in order to get the, this is what you do when you know you have people buy the, I'm not going to finish that expression. When you have people, you say, great, come back. The other thing about Bridgerton specifically, remember, is I don't think it was supposed to be a split. I think it was, COVID plus strikes. I think there was like issues with a lot of the filming and then the editing. So I don't necessarily think they wanted to do it this way, which is why it's so short. But like, I think they saw the lesson from Stranger Things and went, yeah, this works for us. Like, this is it's like a season ending. It's a cliffhanger. People will come back. And for friends of the show who watch Bridgerton all 4 episodes in one day, I know I did at like 7 in the morning. It's a great cliffhanger to end on. And so, no, this is what Netflix should be doing. It is like, you, my biggest complaint with Netflix is that it turns its extraordinary, which is the very, very, very few, in terms of scarcity, series and films that, or I guess series that really, really generate significant audiences, they treat those extraordinarily valuable properties as ordinary TV shows and they just drop it all at once. Treat them like the extraordinary valuable property that they are. Make people wait. People are going to come back and then they get twice the cycle out of it, right? Because by the time this first social media cycle of Bridgerton stuff wears off, the second one comes out and then they get more conversation about it. So no, smart, smart, smart all around.
All right, there's your answer, Brian. It works as intended. Billy wrote in and said, you always talk about habits, opening the app on that day of the week, Netflix power of recommendation. Am I a weirdo for not watching the first recommendation or the first app I see? I watch trailers, I read reviews, I track everything on Real Good to know what's available. I really don't care about what's trending the second. It shouldn't be a part-time job, but what if all consumers were more active in knowing and seeking out what we like?
Jason, do you have any thoughts? I've got some, but
I don't know. I think Billy's an outlier, and that, I mean, everybody maybe has a little bit of this word of mouth and things they're interested in, all of that. But I think that there are a lot of people who just want to sit down and watch something, and that that's why the habit forming and recommendation algorithms matter.
Here's my point, Billy. So you've touched upon the thing I care the most about in life, which is that we no longer seek. We no longer question. We open. What we choose to do comes down to how do I want to waste my time and what app will do that for me the fastest. We've ceded all of our control in the name of convenience. And we don't even think about it. I've been thinking a lot about this a lot, not to divert from our conversation, but about like with Google AI overview and all the stuff that's been going through on search. But like, if you think about why TikTok is so insanely popular, right? It is, I don't think, it knows me probably better than I know myself. And it like sends me stuff and that's, I spend 3 hours on it. Netflix does the same thing. Netflix gets to know you in some capacity and says, hey, don't worry about thinking, we've got this ready for you. And then the other aspect of this, like what makes this work, like what makes the algorithmic recommendation thing actually work, other than the fact that it's personalized and tailored to your interests, is that it operates off power law. So it's like, here's what you're interested in. Also, here's what other people are mostly interested in. And if we can combine those things, which to Jason's point is then word of mouth, is then stuff you're seeing on social, all of a sudden what you have is the incentive, the perfect incentive structure with the ease of accessibility and availability to say, I will click that. And so I think you are a rare person, Bill, you remind me a lot of my Kevin, who is like, I'm keeping track of stuff I kind of want to watch and I'll get to it when I get to it. Like he's just watching Fallout now. Like it's like when I get to it, I'm doing this other thing. I do that with books, for example. But for the most part, I think most people, to Jason's point, just want to watch what other people are watching and also just want to get served something that they think, well, like, okay, this seems right up my alley. Like I'll just click it. I think at the end of the day, like we are overworked. A lot of us are burnt out. We are lonelier than ever. We just want something that makes us feel connected to people and something that we don't have to think about. And this is what, not just the entertainment industry and streaming, this is like what the largest conglomerates around social internet behavior and entertainment consumption have like discovered. And so, yeah, this is my favorite thing to think about. I think about it all the time.
Hey, speaking of, this is not in our show notes. You taking a little time off before you start your new job?
I am taking 1 week off. Oh, I'm going to Philadelphia to go to two museums I've not been to, which I'm excited about. I'm going to, for my Philly friends, the Mutter Museum, which is like a museum of medical history. I'm very excited. And then my book club is reading Gotham, the history of New York up till 1898. And we just got through the Revolutionary War. So I'm going to go to the Revolutionary War Museum. I'm very excited.
That's great. I'm glad you're at least taking a week. It doesn't matter what you do. I think I say this because we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of me leaving my job on a Wednesday and launching a brand new website and podcast the following Monday.
Jason.
And it's because the smart people at my former employer decided to do their massive layoff right before they were going to do it the day the iPhone was announced, and instead they did it the day after the new iPhone was announced. But as a result, I realized if I was going to launch my website and my podcast, that's peak season for Apple, right? Is people want to hear about the iPhone. And so I realized, oh no, I have to launch. And so I didn't ever get my little time between jobs. It didn't happen. So
no, you should take off 2 weeks now.
Well, yeah,
and just not do anything.
Yeah,
not even
it's
think
a good
about
idea
it
for to celebrate my 10th anniversary. But it'll be iPhone. It'll be iPhone time again. I did take a I went to New Zealand. I've done some vacations since then. But still,
take more vacation.
When you change jobs, it's a great time to do something different for a while.
I tell my employee, that sounds terrible, my direct report, Brandon Katz, who's the smartest guy I've ever worked with. He'll eventually be running one of these companies, hands down. Also extremely nice guy. I tell him all the time, because I'm a terrible boss, I'm like, just take a Friday off. It's fine. Just go. Just take it off. Like, don't worry about it. And he's always like, no, I'll get stuff done. And it's like, you know what? The older I get, here's my soapbox. The older I get, the more I'm like, take your vacation. Go rest. Go make memories.
Yeah.
This stuff will be fine. Go do things.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can.
If you can, especially if you are owed it, you should take it. And if you're between jobs, try to give yourself, at least you gave yourself a week. That's good. You know, I was kind of
Jason
thinking,
and
like,
I
you
will
get
do a podcast on burnout advice.
Yeah. Well, you've also had the issue where you've been sort of waiting to get all your ducks in a row in order to announce that you're leaving, which means that limits your time in a way that maybe.
Actually, while we were recording this podcast, this is a fun moment to share with the downstream audience, a little community moment. I just got the letter from my law firm that my visa is approved.
Yay!
So I get to stay in the country another 3 years
and have
and
a new
work
job.
Legally.
Fantastic.
Have a new job. Yeah.
That's great. ZM Knox, a friend of the show, wrote in to say, for the past few months, Apple has been putting great movies on Apple TV Plus, adding movies to the service for a month or two at a time. I found it to be a fascinating way to add catalog content value to the service. I myself have watched 5 or more movies from their selections to start getting through my long watch list. I'm curious to hear what y'all think of strategies like this to help solve the originals only problem Apple TV Plus has had since launch.
Here's my thing. I have one sentence about Apple. Ad library. Like, you're not Brandon, the former very smart person I was just talking about, he had a great tweet. And he said, if you look at Netflix's deal structure right now, they have a pay one with Sony and someone else. And then they have like a pay two with like A24 and like, I think it's Disney. They have a bunch. And so if you're Netflix, why would you spend as much money on original films when you've got all these great movies that you can like treat as new and people come in and they're like, oh, I'll watch Shrek again. Every time Shrek lands on Netflix, it's like in the top 10. Why would you go and spend more content on riskier films? You know, you're still going to bet on some franchises, but riskier films, when you can just bring in things that people love. And the minute they see it again, they're like, oh, this is new because I didn't see it before. Apple.
Yep.
Spends way too much money on risky bets. And if they want something that's going to work for them while they make their risky bets and make the Apple thing, get a licensing deal.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this movie thing is their experiment on that front.
Interesting.
And I also enjoy it. I really like the fact that there are that there's like the hand selected, you know, it's really just whatever package they could buy, set of movies that come on TV Plus for a while and then they go away again, and they tend to be kind of like crowd pleasers and classics and fun stuff. And like, yeah, I agree. I think that this is a direction they should pursue. Whether it's, you know, not necessarily saying, well, now we're another place that you can watch Friends or something, right? But like literally, we will bring some things on and almost make an event out of it. Like this month, I had to laugh. They have an element in their navigation that is leaving Apple TV Plus this month. And I thought, that's so brilliant because you get to promote it on the way in. And then the next month you promote it on the way out. And it provides a little impetus to watch it because, oh no, it's leaving. I better watch it now because otherwise I'll never see this movie that's available everywhere else too. But no, I like this. To ZM Knox, I like this as an idea. I feel like they need to do more of it. But it's a good toe in the water.
By the way, wild that no other company has copied Netflix is like just like as well and as prominent as Netflix is like just arrived, just leaving. Like, guys, just steal what Netflix does well. Like, don't steal legally. Do not steal it. But like, come on, copy it. Facebook arguably got very big because it kept copying things. Instagram 100%. Copied Snapchat. Like, just take what's working and then build out from that.
Yeah, exactly. This is related. Jay says, a few years in now, what do you think Apple themselves are thinking about the future of Apple TV Plus? Personally, it's my favorite streamer. I watch more shows there than anywhere, but it doesn't seem to be taking the world by storm. What's Apple's goal at this point? Ensuring the Apple One bundle has enough value? Maybe Tim Cook just loves awesome sci-fi shows? I will say there was news this week about how Apple is building out their TV app for more TV Plus on Android. So they're, you know, continuing to expand the content. You know, what do you think? What do you think about what Apple thinks of Apple TV Plus.
I'm going to just give a quick thought, but then I want to give it back, the mic back, sure, to you, because you're our Apple genius, you're Apple guru. But my thought is, Jason and I were having a conversation before this podcast about upcoming WWDC, and I had asked him a bunch of, I'm sure, really dumb questions, and he was patient enough to answer.
It was like a tech podcast that nobody gets to hear.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. And he says something really interesting, which is, if you think about where Apple kind of operates, a lot of it seems to be like hedging bets about what will theoretically replace the iPhone, not in terms of physically replacing it, but in terms of business lines. And so he kind of was like, you know, XYZ. And I think Apple TV Plus operates as not as a replacement for, as a business line for the iPhone, and certainly a strong part of the bundle ecosystem, theoretically. I do think it's like, if people move into an appless world where there's this content, they want the best experience, like Vision Pro, like, can Apple fit in there? But everything I kind of try to find a way in for Apple, other than the ecosystem, which the FTC is like actively trying to break up along with Amazon, I just don't have an answer. But Jason, curious if you have any ideas.
Yeah, I mean, the ecosystem is part of it. I think trying to having some content, having it be in the bundle, being able to use stuff and demo it and show it and make it available to people on their devices. Honestly, the amount of money they spend, it's real money, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to just throw money in a hole. But at the same time, I think it is not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things for them to try to build out their services portfolio and give people more reasons, like Jay says, more reasons to buy the bundle, more reasons to think positively of Apple. I think that Apple is still one of these companies that is playing a much bigger picture kind of game because they can afford to. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that companies that can afford to do some things that are a little bit wilder and a little bit more expensive or weirder, because what if, like, let's just try it out and let's see if it accumulates. And Amazon is absolutely doing this too. Like, let's see how, you know, how we can build this thing and if it has value to us or not. And it's a fairly straightforward way to do that. So I don't know, in the long run, you know, I think their goal, if I had to guess, I think in the long run, they want to be seen as a home for high quality content that is not, or like that is above some of the rough and tumble Hollywood business transitions and transactions that are going on right now. I think part of their pitch is, you know, Zaslav kills movies for write-offs for accounting. And we're not going to do that because we're Apple. We can afford your thing, and it's prestige. They want to be like, we're going to bring prestige. We're going to pay you the money. People are going to be able to see it in theaters. Maybe your shows are going to be good. People love them. We've won Emmys. You win adulation. You get the money. What more do you want? And we're not going to suddenly pull the rug out from under you because we have to merge with Paramount. Right. I think right. That maybe is part of their pitch is can we be a kind of HBO like oasis of good relationships with creative people and making good quality content, because we are not going through the contraction that the entertainment industry is going in. That's my best guess.
I think it's a great guess.
But they could change their mind at any point, right? Like, it would not appreciably alter their business if they said, you know what, we're going to wind up Apple TV Plus. They could do it at any point. I think that the opposite is still true though, which is, but why? Like, again, I think they enjoy going to the Oscars. I think they enjoy having a relationship with sporting leagues, right? Like, I think they like Apple. Apple as a cultural phenomenon, I think, is important to Apple. I think Apple wants its brand to just be everywhere so that it feels like a natural thing, that it benefits them. And so, yeah, it's not just about having a streamer. It is about Ted Lasso being at the Emmys and about everybody thanking Apple. And it is about having your Oscar nominees. That's part of it too, is I know it seems weird to be like, you spend all that money just so you can go to the Oscars. It's like, yeah, but you know, but it's being in the conversation in other parts of the world so that Apple is perceived as being kind of positively. I mean, all the negative reaction to their ad where they crushed musical instruments to make an iPad, like that goes against their goal, which is mm-hmm. to be thought of positively and as a champion of the arts and creativity. That's their plan. Mm-hmm. And so, again, being a participant is part in movies and TV is part of that, too. That's my take. We have one more
great take.
One more letter from Anonymous, who writes, I love the show and the perspective from both Jason and Julia. Since Jason talked about a pep talk for Disney Plus, I wonder if you have a pep talk for Prime Video. What do you see from the outside that Amazon should do, or what advantage do they have that they're not taking advantage of? You have some positive, as you go out here, some positive words of like, hey,
yeah.
Hey, Prime Video. It's you don't sell yourself short. There's so much potential there.
Look at Prime Video's performance over the last year. It's stellar. They've got huge shows. Fallout's still doing incredibly well for them. Reacher's doing incredibly well. They've got a success with, I forget their teen show, but they're putting up numbers finally.
Yeah.
So I think Amazon is in a great momentum. This trend, this also plays into kind of a switched up strategy that came into play about 18 months ago. So we're finally seeing the effects of it. I think Amazon is about to turn a corner. We've got the second season of Rings of Power, which I actually think will be better than the first.
Sure.
They've got football. They are likely to have the NBA. They are figuring out their global. I think they're in a great position. And in terms of what they are not taking advantage of outside of obviously the ecosystem, which they are clearly taking advantage of, twofold answer. One is the MGM library, figuring out ways to reboot, figuring out ways to bring some of those movies back to theater, figuring out ways to do more with those, to showcase more of those, to license some of those. MGM library that they acquired for far more than it was worth at nearly $9 billion, they should do more with. And two is Twitch. Young audience on Twitch. Amazon Prime Video tends to skew a little bit older, the exception being like The Boys, and they've got a great one with Fallout, but like Reacher is prime dad energy. And so if you think about how they can reach younger audiences with their content, Twitch allowing more, they like let like 50 series, like they were allowed streamers to have access to like 50 different titles, and it kind of didn't work. But finding ways to really engage Twitch and create a communal viewing experience on a platform that has scale. So like think about if YouTube kind of did this, but it's based upon watching something together live, which kind of hits at this loneliness epidemic we're in. It kind of hits at this idea of how we consume content and the incentives to really show up for something. I think Twitch is vastly underused. And I think it's a challenge. They're clearly thinking about it. But I think, yeah, that's probably their most underused component for Prime Video.
I'll throw one more thing in, which is Prime Video, seen as an extension of Amazon Prime, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that they took a lot of hits because a lot of people rolled their eyes when they said, well, Prime users will get it, but they were going to see ads unless they pay us even more. Well, first off, here's my part of my pep talk. You're in the ad game now. Amazon commerce, it's a good place to be. So you got that and you turned it on by default and people have to pay to not see it. But I would say also it kind of makes Prime Video feel like a streamer too. Like if you want to pay a small and are not a Prime subscriber, you can pay a small amount of money. I don't even know what it is now. And you can get Prime Video and then you can pay more and get it without ads. Like that's a thing that you could do for a while now, but like it feels a little more like they're just in the game now and not just as an esoteric brand extension, especially since I don't like them. I actually am paying to not see them. But ads in Prime Video, like what could be more Amazon-like? And it means that you're in that game where you actually have a lot of power because you're Amazon. So to finally lean in all the way, I feel like Prime Video this year has really kind of gotten where it should have been all along. And I know it took time for it to get there, but they got hits. They got their ad tier now. They're presumably serving a whole lot of ads with more possible as they gear up. I'm pretty positive about it. I think they're making it what it needs to be. How about that?
Agreed.
That's our pep talk. Look at that. All right. Well, unfortunately, that brings us to the end of this episode. Aww. But if you have a question for me and whoever else is here, downstreamfeedback.com. Love to your mothers. We still love hearing from you. If you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber, this brings us to the end of the show. In the Downstream Plus version, we had a lot of Sports Corner talk that you missed. I'm sorry about that. Every other episode, most of the show is available just for supporters. If you would like to support us, go to downstream.plus. You will get full versions of every episode, access to the Relay FM Discord, where some very nice people are, bonus shows from Relay FM, and a whole lot more. You can find Julia around. She's around.
I'll still be on Twitter.
Loudmouth Julia on Twitter. Yeah. I'm not going to call it
TBD
X.
TBD on wherever we're going.
TBD on wherever. But you can find out. I'm sure that I will mention Julia. Maybe Julia will come back sometime and talk about things that aren't streaming. We'll do like a bonus where we talk about some other topic that you're allowed to talk about. I don't know. We'll see. But you can find Julia around. She'll be around the internet. I promise you that. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts at RelayFM and TheIncomparable.com. And one last time, Julia, say goodbye.
Oh, thank you guys for everything. And Jason, thank you. Like this has been a blast, as I said in our Slack, and getting to just talk to you every couple of weeks and learning from you and getting smarter from you is a dream, honestly. And so, yeah, just, you know, thank you. I guess bye, everyone.
Yeah, well, thank you. I feel very privileged to have been able to pick your brain for 70 episodes. I'm not, like I said, I'm not surprised that somebody stole your brain away from us, because it's a really good brain. You should be very proud of your brain. And congratulations to whoever that nameless company is that will get to pick your brain going forward. But it's been a privilege for 70 episodes. Good luck to you in the future.
Thanks, Ben. Bye, guys.